And we're going to skip over the fourth case because it's going to be decided on the briefs. And we'll move on to the fifth case, U.S. versus Phillips, 09-1262. And for Ms. Phillips, Mr. Bartolik?
Yes. May it please the Court, Your Honors. Michael Bartolik, appointed counsel for the defendant appellant, Ms. Teresa Phillips. Prior to trial, the defendant appellant moved in limine to bar introduction into evidence of a redacted recording of a statement made by her to undercover agents. In U.S. v. Scarborough, the defendant there objected to a redacted recording prior to trial. And what the district court judge did there was review the redacted recording as well as the unredacted recording. The court there held that the redacted recordings were admissible. However, if the defendant had wished, she could have had the whole recording introduced. In this case, what the district court did was very different. The district court did not review either of the recordings. The district court merely relied on the prosecutor's representation that everything that had been redacted was irrelevant and said that the motion was moot because the prosecutors promised to bring the unredacted recording to trial, merely promised to bring it. What the district court ended up doing there was permitting the prosecutors to make the determination of what was relevant and what wasn't. And there was never any disclosure as to what that was redacted, what the content of that was, such that even indirectly the court could have made a determination whether what was redacted was relevant or not.
Well, what in it would be helpful to your client?
Well, we don't know that, Your Honor.
And your client testified.
She did.
And could give her side of that conversation, I suppose.
She could have. And I will get to that point in a moment, Your Honor. The government had argued in briefing that there couldn't have been any prejudice as a result of this because the defendant was a party to those conversations that were recorded and could have testified. However, I think with that, agreeing with that argument and holding that way, what that would do would be permit prosecutors to have a backdoor route to strip defendants of their Fifth Amendment right not to testify. In this case, Ms. Phillips did testify. However, it would have been her right not to. And by holding that the court, district court, made the right decision, essentially it would have compelled Ms. Phillips to testify in order to rebut and testify as to what the content of those recordings were.
Well, didn't you have all of the unredacted transcripts?
There's disagreement as to whether or not those were produced, and we contend that they were not.
Why not?
Why were they not produced?
Yeah, I thought they had an open file policy where you can go in and look at the government's case. Very laudable discovery policy. And I don't know, I just can't figure out why, if there was something in addition to what the government wanted to put in from those recordings, that you didn't have it. I think, looking at this, that you had access to anything, could have put in anything you wanted to.
Well, Your Honors, I regret that I was not the trial counsel.
Yeah,
here, and I can't answer for why trial counsel did or did not do certain things.
But isn't it a fair look at this to say that defense counsel had an opportunity to look at all of this? Say it's 100 minutes and the government wanted to put in 10, and you could have looked at it and put in 5 or 10 of your own. Isn't that a fair way to look at what happened
here? It would depend on whether or not when the redacted recording was produced, whether or not counsel really knew it was redacted until shortly before trial or not. I think it's possible that a redacted recording could appear to be a full recording if portions are merely deleted, unless there's something inserted that suggests, this now is redacted. We know that a transcript that was produced at some point had noted that certain portions were redacted.
I'm sort of troubled by your suggestion that the trial judge had some obligation to look at this whole thing and figure out what could go in and what could stay out.
I understand Your Honor's trouble, but I think if we look at what happened in Scarborough, I think it makes that they're pretty clear. Where the defendant objects prior to trial to using a redacted version, I think the trial judge should do one of two things. Either first review both the redacted and unredacted recordings and determine whether or not the redacted one should be admitted to evidence, or merely rule the unredacted version should come in.
And the third option is that you can put in anything that you want to put in that entire record.
In a case where the unredacted recording had not been produced, though, as a matter of public policy, this could invite a Brady violation, and the whole matter could be avoided by simply ruling up front either the whole recording comes into evidence, or the judge should actually review both of them. And again, by putting the onus on the criminal defendant to testify at trial as to what the redacted portions contained, when in this case, in the government's case in chief, there was not testimony as to what at least the substance of the redacted portions were, it really is, it's a backdoor route to stripping the defendant of her Fifth Amendment right. We are going to stand in our briefs for the second argument.
So what you're saying about her testimony is that at trial what she testified about were the things that were said during the conversation that weren't included in the portions offered by the government? That's what her testimony was? That when she was talking to the two undercover agents, she really said X, Y, and Z, and they didn't testify about that?
I make no representations to Your Honors as to what was on
She was compelled
were.
To testify.
If we accept that argument that there was no prejudice here because the criminal defendant could have testified and told the jury what those
not
redacted portions
did.
Were. Pardon me?
Not could have, did.
Well, in this case, she did testify, yes.
Yeah.
But essentially, this would be a precedent allowing a backdoor route to strip the defendant of her Fifth Amendment right. All right, any other questions, Your Honors?
I don't think we have any.
Thank you.
And for the government, Ms. Greenwald.
Yes, may it please the Court, Helene Greenwald on behalf of the United States. Let me begin by saying that, as we point out in our brief, defense counsel did have the full unredacted tape from the beginning of discovery in this case, and had it from the beginning, and that the defendant was represented in the trial court by a defense counsel who was very active in bringing discovery issues to the court.
There were quite a few motions, weren't there?
There were, including one where inadvertently the government had mistakenly left out a page of a grand jury transcript when we produced 3500, and rather than just calling and asking for it, the defense attorney actually filed something with the court saying, produce this missing page. So on this record, it is overwhelmingly clear, I believe, that had they not had the full tape, this would have been quite severely brought to the court's attention. And in fact, Judge Manning, in ruling on the bond issue, this court asked the district court to please explain its reasonings for denying bond pending appeal. And Judge Manning, in her decision, gave her reasons, and then said, I also looked in the motion filed before this court, and in fact, the motion for bond pending appeal before you is different than what was before me. And in looking at this issue regarding the redacted transcript, which was brought for the first time on appeal, she said, that was never raised before me. It was never suggested whatsoever that these parties did not, that the defense did not have the full transcript. So, as to that factual matter, I think the record is clear. And as to Scarborough, not only is it not the law in this circuit, but I'm not sure it's the law in the Sixth Circuit either, since in that case, and the cases cited by defense counsel, there was an issue between the parties as to what would be played, whether the tapes were audible or not, which portions of the tape would be played. Whereas here, in response to this objection to playing a redacted tape, the government said, then play whatever portions you want. And therefore, Judge Manning rightly found the issue to be moot and needed to go no further with it. So unless the court has any other questions, we are going to rest on our brief as to that issue as well as the second issue. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. And rebuttal time?
3 minutes.
Just briefly, Your Honors, the only thing we would suggest is counsel had refer to some documents that were on file after the notice of appeal was filed, and relating to bond for pending appeal, and we only think that Judge Manning's decision later, her filing with this court as to why she had not granted bond pending appeal for longer, we think that is not, that shouldn't be part of the record. We essentially are criticizing a decision made by the district court, and for whatever reason, I think that naturally the district court is going to contend that that made the right decision.
All right, I want to thank both counsel for your presentation, your helpful arguments, but to you, Mr. Bartolik, especially, I want to extend the appreciation of the court for your acceptance of this appeal and your advocacy, vigorous advocacy on behalf of your client. Thank you.
Thank you.